session of the Berlin Mayor and Council for Monday, May 11th, 2020. As has been our tradition for many, many years, I'd like to begin with us all reciting the Lord's Prayer.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory forever.
Amen.
Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, the first item on our agenda tonight is the approval of the minutes for the budget work session held on April 27th.
Motion to approve.
Okay, we have a motion to approve the work session minutes by Councilmember Goyas. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay. Let the record show that we had minutes were approved with a 4-0 vote, and that all council members were here except for Councilmember Burrell. All right. Next is the approval of the executive session minutes of April 27th.
Motion to approve.
Okay, we have a motion to approve the April 27th executive session minutes by Councilmember Boyas. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Again, 4-0. The statement of the closure for the executive session was under the Open Meetings Act of Maryland was before a contract is awarded or bids are open to discuss a matter directly related to a negotiating strategy or the contents of a bid or proposal. If public discussion or disclosure would adversely impact the ability of the public body to participate in competitive bidding or proposal process. Now, we next have the approval of the regular session minutes for April 27th.
Motion to approve.
We have a motion to approve the regular session minutes to Borough Mayor and Council for April 27th. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Again, vote is 4-0. All right. We're using the live stream format. This is, I think, our third meeting, and we are about to begin item 2 on the agenda, which is a discussion of recommendations for stormwater project cost and stormwater fee increase options. Not for a decision tonight, but this is for information, so we can start thinking about what our options are. But prior to that discussion, I wish to inform all citizens who are following this meeting via live stream of the proposed tax rate for the new fiscal year. The proposed fiscal 21 town budget is based on keeping the real property tax rate at its current level of 80 cents per $100 of assessed value. After the stormwater presentation and discussion, the third item on our agenda will be a public hearing on keeping the tax rate unchanged for the new fiscal year, which begins July 1st. If you have any questions you would like to be discussed, and so I'm talking to all the folks out here who are listening to the listening and watching the meeting. If you have any questions you would like to be discussed about holding the tax rate at its current level, please send them to us via Facebook. A staff member will monitor the questions for duplicates, language, and appropriateness to a public hearing topic. Depending on the volume of questions, we may not be able to address everyone, but we're certainly going to give it a request effort. A staff member will read the questions to the mayor and council out loud via live stream, and we will do our best to respond. There will be no written response via Facebook, but the format will be as close as possible to the regular public hearing procedure the Berlin Mayor and Council has followed for many years. And again, that's not this next item, but it's the item that follows that. And it gives everybody a chance to think if you have any questions that you would like to ask when we start the public hearing in a while. But we have a pretty detailed presentation now from Darrell Kohler and who for the EA Engineering and Technology, and
So every once in a while, the opportunity to just give an update on the stormwater program. So this is just that, tied in with the stormwater utilities history, where we are now, and some options we're going through. So I believe everybody has a hard copy. What I'll do is I'll just let you know next page or page number, whatever. So page two is just the agenda for the outline. So I'm going to go over briefly how the and when the utility was established, the completed projects are anticipated and future projects, the project capital cost and budget summary, and then getting to the stormwater utility, the current operation, a summary of revenue and expenses, some potential impacts if the town were to consider an adjustment. And then just the next, or the most, I guess, next project we're looking to do is the Nelson Franklin and Pine, breaking that down further. So we can keep moving, phase it out.
Nelson Franklin and Pine Street.
Yes. Okay, so page three, the establishment of the utility. So town ordinance 2013-1 established the town's stormwater utility. So in 2013, I think January is introduced, and then it became effective in July. And what that said was that an equivalent residential unit, or ERU, is 2,100 square feet of impervious surface. So rather than identifying a specific impervious surface for each residential unit, it was considered each resident or single-family home was considered one ERU. And that rate was decided, was assessed at $50 per ERU, which breaks down to about...
And just so everybody can hear, it's $50 per year for per equivalent residential unit.
Right. Okay. And I think that breaks down to a little over $4 a month. $4.60. At that time, the non-residential, or sometimes called the commercial, allocation was is $25 per ERU. The initial annual revenue estimation was $570,000, which that was revenue generated from $70,000 from the residential, non-residential, $200,000 in the general fund, which was in a little bit of an establishment of the fund, was $300,000. So let's look at just a very brief history on that. I'll go into page four, which is just the outline of the eight projects that have been completed. So since 2014, or basically the last 5 years, we've completed eight projects. Project one was the West Street culvert replacement. Project two was the Flower Street offline wetlands project. Three was the Flower Street culverts replacement. Project four was the West Street storm drain replacement. Project five was the West Street offline wetlands. William Street offline wetlands. Project six was the William Street culvert replacement. And project seven was the Cedar Avenue, Maple Drive, and Pine Street. And then the most recent project eight, which was the Graham Avenue, Spurred Gravel.
Just so people are clear, Project 7, even though it's Cedar, Maple, and Pine Street, that was just the first phase.
Yes.
It was not the whole project.
Yeah, well, it is. It is just partial. Those streets were completed. The bigger project was, I guess, like six streets, right? So that was half of the... We struck... We phased it in two phases. The latter part, which we'll get towards the end, is the finishing up on Pine, Franklin, and then up to Nelson. Slide six is just an illustration on a Google Earth imagery to kind of get the reader to kind of look at the progress. If you look, it kind of puts, has like an arrow that points up, and those follow essentially Hudson Branch and then Model Branch. So we're systematically working up along both of these main waterways through town. Project six. Page six.
Thank you.
So on page six, project one. Again, I'm going to go through each of these projects. Some of the other ones are got some history to it, so I'm didn't anticipate spending a lot of time on it. Project one was the replacement of the box culvert and some introduction of some step pools, some natural stone. This was completed in 2014 at a cost of $134,000. At that time, we received 75% funding from the Department of Natural Resources with a 25% match from the town of Berlin. Project two, which is on slide seven, is the Flower Street Offline Wetlands Project. And this was the creation of a wetland along Hudson Branch to provide water quality and quantity. That essentially gets higher flows from Hudson Branch that diverts that into there rather than kind of backing up over to Flower Street and beyond. It was completed in 2016 at a cost of just under $400,000. And that project, that was in the heart of our funding. It was 100% funded straight from the community development wide. Project three, the Flower Street culvert replacement. This was the replacement of two aged elliptical pipes with two box culverts. And that was completed in March of 2017 at a cost of $330,000. And similar to the Flower Street Offline Wetlands, that was 100% funded by the Community Development Block Grant. Project four, the West Street storm drain replacement. This is still a stormwater project, but this was more deemed as an emergency need stormwater project as down West Street. It was imminent that we had replaced this piping along West Street as the street was subsiding and significant failure in that pipe was required. So this was completed in July 2017. At a cost of $426,000. The cost may seem a little bit higher, but there was significant utility work required along West Street and the intersection of Washington. But this project was considered an emergency project and funded by the town. Projects 5 and 6, the William Street Offline Wetlands and the culverts replacement. So we completed these projects and bid them out at the same time due to their close proximity. And this was the creation of a wetland along Hudson Branch, which provided water quality and quantity, as well as replacement of two metal elliptical pipes with larger concrete pipes under William Street. That cost was $354,000, and that was multiple funding agencies. We received funding by the Federal Emergency Management Administration for $125,000, but that required a 25% match, which was the $41,000 from the town, and then the remaining cost of that project came from the grant from the Department of Natural Resources. Project 7, which is the Cedar Avenue Maple Drive and Pine Street. Again, as the mayor mentioned, this was phase one of this bigger project that connects William Street all the way up through the pipe in Nelson. But due to maximizing the funding through available through the grant agencies, we broke that down into half, and maximized our cost under the grant. So this included piping from a culvert under William Street up to Cedar Avenue, up to the intersection of Maple, Pine, and up Maple a little bit, and then just really right at that intersection of Cedar, Pine. And that project, that cost was $455,000 and funded entirely by the Department of Natural Resources. Project 8, which is the Graham Avenue Submerged Gravel Wetlands. This is obviously the most recent project and primarily a water quality project with some additional water quality management. The project was based on grant funding from the Chesapeake Bay Trust. It was completed in December of last year. What remains is the actual wetland plants. I know it looks nice and green out there with some wetland grasses and stuff like that, but once that project is finalized, there'll be some nice plants in the center there. Get some color to it and don't have some problems.
Would you explain the environmental advantages of having those plants there, because it's not just aesthetic.
Correct. So the submerged gravel wetland project, the intent is to intercept the stormwater and get it introduced to some plant uptake for nutrient uptake. It gives a chance the plants will bring up, you know, what we consider like evidence of the nutrient uptake. And then they want to take that nutrient and phosphorus out of the water. And then the submerged gravel wetland is designed so that water level can get up into that level. So you don't see a typical stormwater management pond with standing water. You're going to see, for the most part, a high percentage of time, mulch and grasses up there. But the layers below that are a mixture of mulch and topsoil and sand, 4 feet of stone, and then below that is the sand and clay layers. But so it infiltrates very well, but when these storm events happen, it's going to rise up. Those plants
have the water quality. It would be like a sort of a large natural sponge.
Yeah.
I mean, basically, it temporarily holds water, then it gradually goes back. And basically, instead of destroying plants in nature, we're putting the plants to work to help clean the water.
Yeah, we're taking advantage of the uptake from the plants. And then over time, it's gonna drink that water. But during the summer event, it's still going to be pushing that water through. And as we found out during construction, we had to add a bonus that at the bottom of the excavation is a little bit sandier than we realized, which is good. So it take more.
Sort of more.
And
part of this, too, it will eliminate the problem, but it helps to offset some of the flooding in that neighborhood. And that's why the next phase is needed to eliminate.
The next phase is absolutely needed to mitigate the flooding in Nelson and Franklin. Yes. I think we've had a couple okay rain events to test it, and I think we've seen it. It dissipates very quickly, but you know, as you've seen, it's going to still pull up in Nelson, and it'll cap that. But what I've seen is almost inside of an hour, it's really dissipating, and that's the function of that getting ready to that. Facility taking on that water versus just sitting in the roadway and getting the house.
Are the residents starting to see a difference in their
lots? I think that, Jeff, the town, you can speak to that. I know you've had more conversations. I've heard nothing but great things, but I think, Jeff, you have more personal.
I will tell you, I forget the date of the last major rain event where we had a significant work. I think it was a Friday afternoon where rain cats and dogs. It was flooded down there. There was no doubt about it. The actual pond, you didn't even know it existed at one point. So the water did dissipate very quickly. And I know that my conversation with a couple of residents out there, they told me that they had seen a difference.
So what we're doing now is what flooding, when it does occur, is going away quicker than it ever has. But what we need to do is the next project so that flooding only happens when we have an extreme rain event. Am I summarizing that accurately?
I think so.
Okay.
That's
what I'm asking.
And as you get towards the latter part of that system on Pond into Cedar, I mean, just a few years ago, when we were doing construction on that on Cedar Avenue, that intersection of Bryce and Franklin, that would be mess, completely submerged under 2 inches of rain. Now it's so much better. I mean, that intersection needs to be passable now to get that much.
That last major rain event, I mean, I'm not going to make any bones about it. It was flooded up, but it was a significant amount of rain, or a real short period of time, whatever.
Okay, which takes us right into our future projects. Right.
Yes.
Real quick, when is the targeted date for the planning to take place?
Well, we don't have a specific date. We did have a date and volunteer event planned for April, but we requested an extension, and we don't have a date for this at this time. We're working with the Maryland Coastal Bays. The premise is, and part of the grant funding actually is community outreach. Yeah, so maybe September, being my guess. I don't want to wait too far, and when it's more Costa Bay's, it's their,
their call.
I guess they're managing that, that component of the grant and finalizing it.
Well, I think we're all very much more than hoping and praying that by September we're back to business as normal as it will be.
I'm throwing out September just because of school
and
the kids for the volunteers. We can plan, it depends on weather. We don't want to plan in hot weather, so hot temperatures of July and August. So that's my thing. September will be able to plan for the rest of the site.
We did have a comment asking if we could speak up, so that's, I did turn the air down. Just wanted to let you know that.
Okay. To wrap up the project aid, the funding source was multiple funding agencies. We received $55,000 from the Department of Natural Resources. That was a team effort with the Maryland Coastal Base. There was some funding that they had, $75,000 from the Chesapeake Bay Trust and $45,000 from the town of Maryland. Moving forward to the future projects, again, this is an illustration. These are four of the endangered with bigger projects. So we've talked extensively about the next one in series, the Nelson, Franklin, and Pine Street. Then is the West Street and Aggie Lane. Then we have Henry's Mill and Henry's Green. And then the Hudson Branch and Bay Street. I'll briefly talk to those four projects. So finishing up Nelson, Franklin, and Pine Street, this is connected where we left off at Midway down Nelson and on to Poppy. The design is not, it's considered 95% complete. We have it all designed. We know what we want to do. What we got to do is segregate that, the part that we completed. So that's why it's called 95%. This is ready to go. We know what we got to do. The budgetary cost estimate is $850,000. There's some unknowns in that with a utility. There's a Verizon fiber optic that goes across Pine Street that's going to be fun. So when we talk about the phasing, what I'd like to do is at least, maybe we can ask for a price. I guess the first thing we can do is start phasing it out. But these are budgetary cost estimates. I'm hopeful that they are on the conservative end. So that's the first project, or the first of these future projects. But certainly, I think we all agree that's our main interest in going towards. The West Street and Abbey Lane. This is the existing stormwater collection piping at the intersection of West and Abbey Lane, along with piping along West Street, which is significantly undersized. And as well as stormwater diversion and increased pipe siding is needed. So design status is we have a concept laid out essentially for our grant applications that we prepared. We've identified the pipe that we needed and the preliminary sizing calculations. But it's a bit of a distance to go from Abbey Lane, essentially got to get that all the way down to Bottle Branch and that culvert system we put in. So taking out that around the road and dealing with the utilities is going to get costly. I will say this budgetary cost estimate is based on our grant applications, and we wanted to incorporate some environmental site design features, some offline stormwater components, and the submerged gravel wetland and stuff like that. That would help us and make us most competitive for this project. When I talk about phasing, in a couple years, we got where we want to be. We finished Nelson and Franklin, and we're moving on to West Street and Aggie Lane. We're really going to rethink this and phase it out and bring this number way down into a chunk.
Total number won't go down, but it'll be broken down into smaller units, which you've never mentioned. The overall cost of this West Street and Abbey Lane is $1.8 million.
Correct.
So what you're saying here is that maybe in three phases can be done, or something like that. So, because coming up with that much money at one time is just not likely.
Right, and we want to keep making progress, and that's when we get to the phase approach proposed, or the concept phase approach for Nelson, when we get to these other projects. I think that's what we're going to be looking to do, all concurrent with trying to get grant money. So that's West Street, Abbey Lane. I think we all know that's a dire need at that intersection. We're on page 16 now, the future project for Henry's Mill and Henry's Green. This project includes replacement of existing storm drain piping to correct elevations and size. At the end of, I don't know if it's Davis or the one over, is it Ann Court? At the end of Ann Court, when there's some pipe that goes under a residential yard, I don't know if it was settled or what, but we have some elevation concerns that we just need to get in there and replace that pipe, and that will help out a lot. But also, there's some improvements that go under the road, the cul-de-sac in between Henry's Mill and Henry's Green and going to the pond over there. This project is estimated at $450,000. Again, the design level is concept in terms of what we prepare together for grant applications.
Darrell, where does Henry's Mill and Henry's Green, where are you going to divert that to? Is that going to go underneath the railroad and out somewhere?
So the route right now is it goes into the that stormwater management pond.
Uh-huh.
And then it does out outlet along the railroad and then across, and then eventually gets its way over to Bottle Branch and through West Street.
So years ago, when we discussed this, and this is going back probably 5-6 years, I guess, it's those pipes that go underneath the railroad were really narrow. Are we going to be able to, do we have to increase the size of those? Are we going to have an issue doing that with the railroad? I mean, how does all that work?
Well, I know last year the railroad company actually contracted and went in and cleaned those ditches and cleaned those pipes to clear them out. I have not been there to check to see if they're actually full capacity during rain event. It's a good point, so I don't know. They're sizable pipes. I think they're good, you know, 60-inch maybe. So I would think that they're not at capacity. I think our issues there are relieving that stormwater pond and getting it over there. I think there's a connection.
Yeah.
I think there's some maintenance things that that pond can take on that might help. We've been in contact with the HOA and gave them suggestions. I guess it's maybe some funding, I don't know, for them, but that's on theirs. The town, what we can do is there's an easement that is in between these Henry's Mill and Henry's Green that we can do this pipe on. But no, I think I would like to maybe visit that pipe and go to heavier event to see where we are with capacity. Because you're right, if we had to go under the railroad, that's a venture with the railroad company.
Oh, absolutely.
Now, I believe not this fiscal year, but last fiscal year, there was a grant that we were trying to get for some planning and the initial phases of something behind West Street and Henry's Mill and Henry's Green, but we weren't awarded that grant, correct? Now that was more an offline wetland behind those residential areas to help alleviate some of the funds.
Yep, so actually where Franklin Knoll that comes on the other side, that has a little stormwater pond that goes out along the agricultural fields, and what we thought about is there's some open area that would be ideal if we could do something offline there. That would really do well, one, for the management of stormwater in that area, but as well as the water quality, and it showed very well in the grant applications.
And that's something we did try for with the planning phases, but we just weren't awarded.
Correct. But I believe one of the things we had against us in that application is we weren't too far along with that easement process of that property. So if we do want to consider that, we got to get in touch with the property owner and see if we can't get some type of, loose agreement. I don't know. I mean, it's going to be maybe contingent. I don't know what we can do that's going to show well in the grant application, but they felt that you don't have that parcel secured. It's not the town. You're relying on somebody else giving you access, and that's going to be tough to give you grant funding and move forward when we don't have the confidence that you have. That. Unlike the parcel for Grand Avenue, was the town's own parcel, and they recognize that, and they'll just give that the grant and work with that.
Is that something that we can begin getting those building blocks in place and securing? What would we have to do on our end to be able to do that?
You'd have to get an agreement from the property.
Could we then cut? I mean, if funding like that became available, I would hate for us to have to, those have a very short window of time.
Correct.
The last one did, and we weren't able to secure that because we didn't have that in place. So
well, should basically, as you're suggesting, should we get right away or easements as soon as possible, and that way when the application is made, we've got that behind us. I mean, I don't understand why we have to wait to do that.
We do not.
Okay.
And that's
so let's even though it's not the very next project, I think in our scheme of things here, let's see if we can't begin that process this year and have it wrapped up by next year.
I mean, because if something comes along like what we had, not this fiscal year, but last fiscal year, I mean, we weren't able to secure that, and we have to learn from that and move forward and try and gain that easement.
So and I think part of this is public education, understanding that we're not asking anybody to give up anything, just allow us to fix the problem, and just all we need is an easement, which does not keep anybody awake at night. It doesn't do anything. And I think this is one of the things we have to do, because, people in the community live in a community. It's not just about, if you're not being adversely impacted yourself, why then adversely impact dozens of other people?
I mean, every time we get a big rainstorm, we were talking about what's happening over on Graham, Grice, Nelson, and all those. I mean, my phone's ringing all the time, and I keep telling people, hey, look, there's a list, and we're working down that list, but we have to also make some progress, and if there's an area where we can improve, it's not really going to cost us a whole lot outside of time currently, then I would like to see us move that direction.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. Thank you. Thank you. Hudson Branch and Bay?
Yeah, page 17, which is the Hudson Branch and Bay Street. This project is, I don't think people know this project in terms of nuisance flooding in that area, but it is an important project for the volume of water we get there, and that totally submerges the trunk line, this sewer trunk line of the town. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's still in some solid foundation, and it's got some armored up with that Davian baskets. But it's single contained, and we're seeing those slopes erode. So this project has shown well for grant applications. We just have been out competed. There's other projects that just got in front of us. So we are still continuing to go after this. Now, but should we get this project, it's a more important project for a water quality coastal bay. So the funding agency might lean towards funding this project versus replacing the piping in Franklin, unfortunately. So we can go along parallel paths. We can different funding agencies. Now, we'll say when we get to Nelson, there are still funding agencies that will fund non-water quality projects. FEMA and NEMA, they will still do that. You got to show, and as we've gotten those grant applications in the past. We got one for Wooden Street. So we're still going to aggressively go after that. I believe it's going to be due in August. So we're going to put a solid application. I think we've got a good story to tell that we spent so much money on this part, we spent so much money on this end, we want to connect the two. And I don't know, sometimes I'm a little bit optimistic, but I think we've got a good story to tell for that application to get some type of funding. Now, that will be a 25% match, passed, when if the project is $800,000, then the town dedicating $200,000 is significant. So, but when we break it down and get to the phase part, that might be something, if we want to go after a $100,000 grant for a section of it, complete this street, and then we go on 25% of that, that's a little bit, it'll be more easy to do.
I think the whole stormwater improvements and stormwater mitigation that we've done in the last few years, it's a classic example that if you go with your hand empty, it's going to be empty after you go through the process. But if you go and make a grant application with everything you can scrape together, and you have dedicated funds for it, you can have reasonably good success and keep moving forward. And I think that's why we'll have a discussion that we won't have to make a decision tonight, but we are going to have to consider increases in our stormwater fees, so that these are big, big numbers. So our portion of what we need to put up to get approval for these very large grants, we're going to have to be able to offer up more than what we have in the past. So that's the motivation. It's not just move figures around, but what we've done is, I think we're all grateful, but we've got some big, big projects ahead of us, and we're going to have to put up our fair share.
So going on to page 18, this is a summary with the completed costs, actual costs, and then the budget estimates for those four projects. So without going over the numbers again, just in general, the completed projects, the capital costs come up to $2,273,000. And then if you total up those four projects, a budget estimate of $3.7 million.
That $3.7 million is what we still need to do.
Correct.
And so far we've done just shy of $2.3 million.
Correct.
So I just give you some feel that we're not at the halfway point, but we've got work to do. And once the entire system's done, flooding should be extremely rare in any neighborhood. And another thing I just want to remind everyone is that we're doing this based on the way water flows. It's not one of those things where you can just pick this or this neighborhood and that. No, it's all based on the flow of the water. So we're trying to make sure that as one area gets ready, then we move upstream, so to speak. We know it's a relatively flat, it's not totally flat. And that we're making sure that we're not just moving the flooding around, that we're basically diminishing the areas that are adversely impacted over time.
Gotcha. Yeah. Page 19, this starts getting into the solar utility. So as current and will be the 2019-2020 as budgeted, from the solar utility, the estimated revenue is $169,550. The expense is $129,550, essentially the staff and everything that goes into running the utility for the town, so which is estimated current available capital cost of $40,000.
I have a question about that. So if we go back to page 3 and we talk about the implementation, and if I see this correctly, it says the initial annual revenue estimation was $570,000. Is that okay? Is that counting the contribution from the general fund?
Correct.
Of $300,000?
Yeah.
And then it says our non-residential customers would equal $200,000, and the residential customers would equal $70,000.
Okay.
Correct.
So 270, and then what were we just at on the other page? Where were we at?
170.
Yeah. Where's the other $100,000?
The other $100,000 is when the proposed utility was established, it was for $50 an ERU for residential and non-residential. When we were going through the establishment of the utility, it was decided that for the commercial and non-residential, the $50 per ERU became very evident that was very stressful. So on those businesses. through a lot of feedback, we decided to go for the commercial to be at $25 per year. So the actual revenue that non-residential or commercial is collecting is closer to $100,000 now, which is the half.
All right, so hold on. Let me go back to page three.
So page three was the estimated projections, basically, based on the initial calculations at the establishment of the stormwater fund of 2013 with the help of the general fund, and the calculations at 50 per commercial and 50 per residential estimated general fund, estimated stormwater revenues at 570 to start the fund.
All right.
Okay.
So
as the time passes by, we calculated commercial at half.
So hold on, I got to go back to 2013.
Okay.
So 2013, were these numbers ever actually realized? So $50 for the residential customer, that is fact,
correct,
right? To
yes.
Today.
Yes.
And the non-residential customer, i.e. commercial, right,
correct,
would be $50 in 2013. Was that ever actually $50?
And
now explain why.
When the ordinance got introduced, that was what was proposed. These numbers, I get your question, and I think this presentation, this part of this is a bit misleading. These numbers are what, when the ordinance got first introduced, here's what we think, what we're going to propose this utility will generate. Over those 4 months, I believe from January to May or so, when it was going back and forth in those finals, it got finalized at keeping the residential at $50 in the ERU and the $25 for residential and then non-residential at $25. So it was never
$50.
Correct.
So it was proposed at $50, adopted at $25.
Correct.
Thank you.
And that's why we're going to have to consider adjustments being upward for some of our fees going forward. And part of this too, just give perspective, back when all this was proposed, this was all ideas, and now I think people have seen that particularly those areas, neighborhoods that have been benefited from our stormwater utility, and I think now people can see its value. Whereas then there was still a lot of skepticism that we could do anything about the rate, and that's understandable. And I also think businesses now understand that, hey, everybody, it might be just not any one particular property, but as a community, benefits everyone. And I think there's a stronger support for the stormwater utility than there's ever been. So this is why later this year, I think we need to adjust those rates so that we get the kind of revenue, not just because we want it, because we need to put up more of our town money to get these larger grants to continue forward.
One more question. How did we arrive at the $50 per ERU for the residential and non-residential customer?
The number $50?
Yes.
That was heavily based on a financial study prepared by the University of Maryland Environmental Finance Center, and going through, and they calculated the capital, well, we provided them at that time, the capital cost that we're hoping for to raise to complete these projects. And they put I forget, it was a 10 or 15 year plan together, taking into what the town can contribute, what that revenue, and then to tackle those projects over that period of time. So it was calculated by, and the short answer is environmental finance.
Do we have a copy of that? Can somebody send it to me, please?
I can easily do that.
I believe it's on the website. I can't see
it
at the moment, but
it is.
Can somebody call me and send me a copy? Thank you.
And Darrell, didn't they also do all that GIS mapping at the same time? And they were measuring everything in the town?
Yes. Well, actually, EA did the GIS impervious service.
Correct. I mean, they just didn't throw darts at the wall because I remember them doing that.
Yes.
Okay.
For the non-residential. For each of those parcels, EA measured the impervious area, or took our best estimate based on aerial imagery. We didn't go out to each parcel or anything.
Now, when we're talking about impervious surfaces, we're talking about paved and where there may be a structure, right? And gravel drivers, okay? So those components go into this calculation for the residential, but it's been aggregated to say it's one per residential dwelling unit, I assume.
Yeah.
And then there's a math equation that goes into the amount for a commercial customer?
Exactly. We, rather than measuring the impervious surface for each single family home, it was decided, I mean, recommended from the Environmental Finance Center, but I think it's an adopted approach. It's the ERU approach where it's basically assuming that each household, on average, has 2,100 square feet of impervious. There are some houses that don't have that much, and some houses could have twice that much. So when you measure a commercial, a school, church, town facility, and say they measure at 21,000 square feet of impervious, they are essentially 10 ERUs. You take that divided by the 2,100 per ERU. And their fee for that parcel will be 10 ERUs, or 10 times, where the breakdown is 25.
And that's billed annually? Well, I mean, it's billed monthly, but the ERU is an annual fee. So
for that example,
right, we're talking about if we use that equation, then we're not talking about $50 times 10 or so for each month. We're saying that on an annual basis, correct?
The numbers per ERU are annual.
Okay. Correct.
So they're paying on a installment basis. And that was another thing I think people, once they realized, no, we're not sending them a bill for the whole thing in one time, but over 12,
right.
12 payments. And it was interesting. I think it was a lot more fear than when it was implemented than people found that, wait a minute, this one was overwhelming. And that's why, we're going to just be very frank, that we're going to have to consider if we're going to continue to move forward, how is our share going to go up? The only way it can go up is if we have an adjustment upward in some way. We haven't got the side up, and we're not going to even try tonight. But when everybody starts thinking about it, do your research and so forth. But I'm going to say by the beginning of 2021, by January, we need to have something in place that will start building up the town funds that are dedicated to stormwater improvements that we can put up as our share for these grants, regardless of where they come from. And without those, the application process is kind of an act of futility. If you don't put up your own money, there's just you're not going to get the 10 or 20 to $1 support from these various grant agencies.
Well, history, you know, shows us that when we set up a utility and we had it ramped up by town contributions, and we demonstrated we had, you know, $700,000 in that revenue stream and grant application. Within, you know, 3 years or so, we had almost $2 million in grants. So, yeah, the more money we can leverage and show that the town's dedicated, but that's a lot of money.
And just to put it in perspective, so far we've spent just under $2.3 million. Going forward, we need another $3.7 million. So in round figures, when this is done on what we know about now, we'll have the total expenditures for upgrading our stormwater everywhere in town will be about $6 million.
Well, I want to be careful by saying stormwater everywhere, if I may.
Well, stormwater, we're planning.
I mean, yeah. These are the major hotspots. Yeah. There are still numerous other areas that need some localized funding addressed.
But we're going to get those after we get the big problem taken care of. Right?
Yeah, these are the major nuisance flooding areas. The other ones are smaller.
I just want to make sure, because I'm trying to remember back to 2013.
Yeah.
From what I understand, though, when we no longer need the big, big projects, that's the reason the fee continues, so that we have an income stream to address these smaller issues wherever they may be. You don't have, we basically, it's just like any other utility. We have the funding to maintain a stormwater utility, which means controls flooding everywhere. But you can't just do this all the time. You have to do it in stages. And I think that's another thing I just want people to realize is that there's a reason funding doesn't stop when we finish the major projects, because maintenance of this facility will go on forever. And but we've got to fix it before we can maintain it.
Okay. Well, the next slide ahead is 20. But again, just, you know, I just want to let you know if any questions as we go along. So this slide is it's a little bit more detail with proposing, or not even proposing, just outlining options if there was adjustments to the utility. So residential stormwater fee, we've talked about that. The current is $50 per ERU per year. If we were to propose $100 per ERU, that would provide an additional revenue of approximately $75,200. And that's based on the 2019 actual numbers. But to put that in a different perspective, the $50 per year per ERU is the $4.16. So that's per month. And then double that. $8 and something for, there's 2 cents for a month for a resident. And that would result in additional $75,000. For the non-residential stormwater fee, going from $25 per year, even to additional $50 per year, I think the town would be in a similar situation we were 7 years ago, recognizing that the stress on the non-residential owners. So throwing out two options, if that went from $25 per ERU per year to $35 per ERU, that option would provide an additional revenue of $41,000. If we were to go to $40 per ERU per year, that estimated additional revenue would be $61,000. Not on top of the $41,000. They're separate. So this is just to say, if you were making an adjustment with the non-residential and the residential, with these examples, let me say, that's the ballpark revenue you see.
Now, I'm still a little confused on it. So the Maryland Environmental Finance Department did a study and recommended $50 for both ERUs, and we adjusted, or whoever was on the council at that time took public input and adjusted that figure to 25 for the non-residential, i.e. commercial ERU. And we recognized the financial burden on the businesses, and now we're going to try and go from 50 to 100 on the residential customer. I think we got to weigh the same economic hardship on the residential customer by going 50 to 100 that we did back in 2013 from going from 50 to 25 for the commercial customer.
Well, I mean, all
I mean, figures, I haven't read the study,
but all these figures can be adjusted, but the key what we have to understand and we have to determine is how much additional money we need to raise to be able to do the projects that need to be done. I mean, we can't get those size projects, the $840,000 and all this other, without our share going up. So I think the thing is, this is an outline. This is a beginning. That's why we've got between now and the end of the year to figure out what the proportional share of the increase should be. But ultimately, we have to come up with our proportional share as a town, the monies that we're putting on the table, in order to even qualify for the grants.
And I mean, I understand that you're saying they're really big ticket items, and I'm not going to argue that. $3.5 million is a big ticket item, but we've also heard that those can be broken down a little bit. It's not ideal, but they can be done. when you look at the initial stormwater problem that we had, that's what, over $5 million in improvements that we deemed needed to be made. But we can break these into smaller slices.
But we're not even halfway done. So we're going to tell people that basically, wait 20 years.
I'm not arguing that. What I'm saying is let's do what we did in the beginning and break these down into smaller projects.
And that's what we will do.
That are manageable in a fiscal year.
But we're not saying we have to do every project in its entirety, but we're saying the cost is going to stay that range, or it may go up a little bit, then who knows what's going to happen with inflation. But what we have to do is, based on the amount of money we were raising ourselves through our fees, then we'll know what we qualify for. And what we qualify for, then we can apply for, and in these plans, then they can say, okay, we can do 40% of the next project. So let's plan for 40%, let's get the design done, and then let's put up our share and get the funding. We're going to break these.
And I'm not disputing that at all. I'm not disputing the process. I'm just saying that the people that I talk to, I think they're overextended as it is with the amount of money that we're asking from them in a given year. And by going $50 to $100, I think that's going to be a huge, it doesn't look like much on paper, but it's a lot for people that are strapped. And in an economic climate that we're already in, I don't think it's a good idea.
Well, that's why we're going to make a decision between now and the end of the year. But I'm saying the figures won't change. It's just depending on how much and how, you know, what kind of timetable do we think we can do as a community. Not just as a town, but as a community. And there's a lot of unknowns. But these facts won't change. You know, it's not like suddenly stormwater management is going to become real cheap. Or the rain will go away. But I think, again, it's a matter of how fast and how much. And I totally agree with that. But I'm just saying, we're not going to, I think everybody needs to know what the costs are. And then we can figure out how we're going to try to phase in these projects over the next few years, but not 20 years.
And I'm not trying to discount the work that's been done. It's been great. I've talked to a lot of people that have been impacted. I used to live on a street that was heavily impacted. So I know that the projects are making a difference. What I'm saying is that we have to weigh that difference with the amount that people can afford. That's it.
Yeah. I just didn't know. The intent of this isn't to say this is what the town should do. It's just like if we were to do it, these are options or examples, I guess I want to say. And just to touch on the $50 for ERU and then, you know, whether it's different for the residential, I think we looked at it is what is that broken down towards the cost, because the commercial cost, since they have such bigger, you know, property, it's going, doubling that, or either one of them, it's just too much for their commercial. Anyway, let me keep moving. So with slide 21, taking those examples or options, the estimated revenue between that residential adjustment and the non-residential adjustment approximate one would raise an additional annual capital of approximately $160,000. The option two, which was that the $25 per year to $40 per year, would raise an additional $136,700. That's what the results of making adjustment, that's what the dollars we would have extra to put towards these projects. Anyway, so going to slide 22 is trying to break these things down so we can keep making progress versus saving that full $850,000 and doing it once. So I broke this slide down into some things that we can work a little bit more with the town. The town certainly has capabilities of doing. We can perform some more video inspection. We have our own cameras and equipment to determine levels of sediment of existing and some more conflicts with sanitary and see if we can't get, you know, some of the low-hanging fruit. Let's jet those areas out, clean them out fully. Jamie, he's not here, but he already does a lot of that. They've been cleaning a lot of
this is something to be thinking about for the future, again, so, because we don't discuss this every meeting.
Yeah.
Is, there were some of the log jams, maybe that's the wrong word, but in our stormwater movement of water, is that some ditches are on private property, and those ditches are not maintained. A lot of them, and it's just the way it is. So over time, we're going to have to find a way to have that those properties, the easement and the property, become part of the town, so that you don't have all this investment, and then there's, you know, a dozen or two dozen properties that basically stop everything, and the water doesn't flow to the coastal bays. So, you know, that's another thing that we have to look forward to. When these stormwater ditches, as most people call them, were thought of, I mean, we're going back over 100 years, and in some cases farther than that. And nobody was thinking about that at the time. So I think that's one of the things that it'd be like, we can't have a utility that the town is responsible for if we can't even touch a certain percentage of those parts. And we won't be able to do it overnight, but it is on our responsibility and all those who follow us to get that done in some sort of meaningful and expedient way and also affordable. But it just has to be done. And, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, every generation has to, you know, hand the baton and takes it as far as they can, and then they hand it off to the next generation. And that's where we are with the stormwater utility. I think most people are pleased that we have one and that we're making progress. How fast and far we can go, time and financial considerations will tell us.
Yeah. Yeah, essentially we're looking at it in a different way. We were fortunate to get large sums of grant funding to do whole projects at once in the past. We're not in that situation now. So to keep the momentum going, let's phase it, let's see what the town can do, let's come up with new ideas, let's piece them down and just keep going. So that's the thought behind it. So breaking down what I call the capital or the contract components, just for this Nelson Franklin Pine project, we can piece out the Verizon fiber optic that's on Pine. I mean, that's a large fiber optic that's in the concrete duct bed. It's going to take some effort to contract that and get that out of the way. There's a sanitary sewer regarding, also requiring a little E1 granite pump that's got to be out of the way so we can put the increased piping there. And then segregate sections of the actual piping, the stormwater improvements, into those two sections. I believe that's the last slide. I burned through that last one. But the intent is that if we can piece these out, even if we're use the little bit of capital we have, all combined, was still going after grant funding. You know, say we submit a grant application for FEMA for $400,000 for this project this year. We don't get it. But this year we complete $75,000 of it. Next year we're going to submit a $325,000 grant application. We're still going to use all we can to go after it. And then at some point we're going to shrink that grant application to get the last
year. Basically, it's not all or nothing. It's what we can manage based on our financial resources and the grant funding at any particular time.
Now, we can still do good. We can still piece this out and do things. We have a stormwater utility. We have means to do some things.
That's fine. That's good. I think it's been a good discussion. It's something, again, thank goodness we have to go over to every meeting, but between now and the end of the year, we have to make some decisions. And, you know, certainly talk to the folks in your neighborhoods and business people and so forth. And, you know, a lot, I guess we'll all know the environment, the economic environment that we're in, much better by fall than we do now.
Yeah. And please share any thoughts or ideas you have. I'm really starting to look at those. If happy to do a social distance site visit with anybody, I don't go out and take a look at any of these sites and try to drum up with some ideas. I can't understand everything on paper. I mean, I do get out there and try to look at storm events as much as possible, but, you know, visiting with the owners and a resident that called you or called you.
slide 22, relocation of Verizon fiber optic at Pine and Cedar. Why would we be responsible for that? Why can't we ask them to go ahead and move it?
We can. The initial contact that we had, we just didn't get that warm impression that this is your prep, or you know, why do we need it? We don't have to move it.
They're not going to.
Well, I'm sure there's some. I'm sure there's some other options that we may be able to discuss later that we can get them to do that.
Okay.
It's a definite no if we don't ask.
Fair enough.
Yeah, so. I agree with that.
Yeah.
Everything can be discussed.
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Awesome. Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
All good.
All good.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you, everybody. Have a good evening. All right. Now, up to number three on the agenda. And Kelsey, I assume you've been receiving some questions and so forth.
Yes, and just so you are aware, there is a slight delay. So when you open the public hearing, you know, it might just take a minute.
Sure, understand. We're not in a race here. Okay, so we're now going to have our town administrator read property tax ordinance in its entirety.
Let's open the public hearing first.
Well, I mean, we want everybody to know what we're talking about, right?
Okay.
Okay, and then we'll open the hearing. I want people to know what it is we're having a hearing about.
Very good. The ordinance that's being introduced tonight is ordinance 2020-02, an ordinance of the Mayor and Council of the Town of Berlin, Maryland, and Maryland Municipal Corporation, setting the real property tax rate for fiscal year 2021. Whereas the Town Charter, Section C3-10, requires the Mayor and Council to pass an ordinance setting the real property tax rate necessary to sustain the town's budget, and whereas the mayor and council have determined what the real property tax rate shall be. That now, therefore, be it resolved by the mayor and council of the town of Berlin, Maryland, that the tax rate for fiscal year 2020-2021 shall be 80 cents for $100 of assessed value of real property located within the town limits of Berlin, Maryland.
Which is the current rate? Which would we increase the rate for the current fiscal year? And what we're recommending is that that rate continue to be the same for the next fiscal year. So now we'll open the public hearing. First of all, do we have any, Jeff, do we have any questions or comments that have been submitted by the state?
No, sir.
The county?
No, sir.
All right, so, Kelsey, do we have any questions from the public?
Not as of right now.
Okay, well, if some come up that are appropriate to the subject, just wave or something, or say whatever. Okay. We'll continue to keep the hearing open so that people have a chance, when, you know, especially under the live stream format that it's new to all of us, and we don't want to rush it. But basically, the budget that is being proposed, regardless if it's the general fund is the budget that is has its primary funding through real property tax rate. The utility budgets have fees based on your sewer fee, your electric utility fee, and so forth. So this is talking basically about the general fund.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes?
Can I ask, has anybody put on there as a comment from the town saying that we would like public comment now? Can we do that so that it's clear to everybody that
I can do that.
We would now like to get
a comment letting them know that once you open the public hearing, we're welcoming questions, but I will say we're welcome.
Yeah, that's why we said that earlier. So
just in case somebody's maybe not able to hear or anything like that.
No problem.
Thank you. I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. We're just trying to get it done the way it should, as normally as possible. Sure.
Okay, I have pinned, we are welcoming questions now regarding ordinance 2020-02.
Which is?
And we do have a question, it's not really tax related, but what is the total cost of overhead for departments or utilities?
And this is regarding this ordinance. Tonight that we're talking about strictly is about setting the real property tax rate for the town of Berlin for the new fiscal year, which begins July 1st.
Can we take like 10 minutes and let the comments come in? And then...
Well, again, this will be the second time. Because remember, that's why before we had that long presentation, I asked people to send the questions and comments.
Oh.
See, remember, that's why we didn't.
So are we looking back further in the thread?
I have been. There have not been any relevant to this ordinance, just the ordinance.
Yeah, I'm just saying, and we can, certainly we're not rushing it, but.
I just envision like my mother there trying to type something. That would take a little bit of time. What's that?
We can take 5 minutes.
That's what I was thinking. If we gave it a little bit of time and just see if anything comes through.
Everybody's trying to adjust to the live streaming and to the stay-at-home life that we're all experiencing. One thing we may not be able to tonight get responses right back, but if you have a question, you think of it later, you can self-send it in, and then we can get a response back. To that question. Okay.
We have a question from Marie DeLong. Isn't the tax rate based on the budget?
Yes, of course. And what we're doing is cutting the general fund budget. I think the general fund budget that's being considered, and we're not doing that tonight. That will be next month. But the general fund budget is being considered for the new fiscal year is $5 million. That's a reduction of $244,600, or 4% below the current budget, current year's budget. There again, it's a $5.9 million general fund budget, and that's 4% below the current budget. And this year's budget was below the previous year's, and the previous year's was below. So this will be the third straight year our budget, general fund budget. Anybody's just joined this live stream of the mayor and council meeting. At this time, we're waiting to see if there are any questions regarding the tax rate that's being proposed for the new fiscal year, which begins July 1. The new property tax rate, real property tax rate, would remain the same as it currently is at 80 cents, $100 of assessed value. So if you have a question, send it in. Council will pass along to all of us.
So the next budget hearing we have 2 weeks?
Weeks.
Budget adoption is on May 26th, Tuesday.
It's the day after Memorial Day, the night after Memorial Day, actually. Yeah.
And if anybody even has any questions for us between now and then, they need to
to send it in.
Send it in and submit them and see if they can get any answers between. It doesn't have to happen during this, this time frame right now.
Might be something they wake up tomorrow morning with questions.
Exactly.
No problem.
He was a people that are not watching tonight.
Could watch him last year, where would be?
Yeah.
He said a word, look at your camera.
He may want to go back a few years to watch a few of them.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Last year wasn't the finest.
We have another question from Marie Belong. She said, staying at this rate, how much more are we getting this year than last year? Constant yield is what I think I am asking.
I can answer that.
Yes.
With the increase in assessed base value, we will receive $153,000 more, which is 4% more from what we budgeted for this current year.
Thank you.
What is the constant yield rate this year?
.783 something. We are 2% above the constant yield that came from the State Department assessment. It was advertised in the paper with the exact numbers. I don't have the exact numbers.
It's based
on roughly 78 cents.
Yeah,
right.
And that's
almost 79 cents.
Yeah, and that's the same difference as the county, even though they have a much larger budget. That's the same percentage that they're by holding their tax rate. It's exactly the same, you know, within a few dollars. Of course, they're bigger dollars and have a much bigger budget, but the percentages are almost identical. But and they are also just as we are proposing just to hold the tax rate where it is.
And I think I want to remind everyone as well, by virtue of the current pandemic, the cash flow inbound is going to be significantly delayed and or potentially decreased.
So when you say that, expand on that. For folks listening, what does that mean?
Well,
we will not receive.
We come up short.
We will not receive.
But explain. You know what I mean? Explain that.
It's not that complicated, but it is not good news. Our revenues from our property taxes that come through the state probably will not be received until sometime in the first part of the year,
and
after January.
And that is because the state filing and federal filings have been pushed back.
That's
correct.
Right.
They allow 6 months extensions. Right. There is no actual penalties and fees in place as of right now if you file late or if you pay late. And also you can have an appeal submitted, I believe, through October for assessed value reduction.
Yeah.
And obviously the payments that normally will be with the due date going July 1st for the billing will be delayed 6 months. The revenue stream collections will be delayed.
So we and everybody else will be waiting for our property tax income that comes through the state and the county to us.
We don't bill. We receive our share.
From the county.
For the town, from the county. So we don't calculate. We don't send invoices. They do.
That's a state office, but it is at the county.
Yeah.
Okay. We won't know when we meet the casino income that we projected. It possibly
not. Okay, that we cut all those potential revenue streams down significantly.
And state and county operating on a very reduced staff. I have spoken to several people. They're literally very behind on paperwork as well because they're just either working from home or being laid off completely. So that's another problem we'll be facing. Even though people will be applying and paying and processing their portion on their behalf, the state will be behind on catching up and the county as well because of the human labor.
Do we have any other questions?
No, we have been open public hearing for 12 minutes now. No other questions.
close the public hearing portion of tonight's meeting on the setting the real property tax rate. And the public hearing is now officially closed. We now have the decision to make as to whether to accept the recommendation that the town administrator and myself are making and the finance director to continue our property tax rate for the next fiscal year at 80 cents per $100 of assessed value. Do we have a motion?
Make a motion. Are we remain the same?
I have a question. Would we be able, you just discussed that the budget is reduced by 4%, and that what we would gain additional from last year to this year by keeping this rate unchanged would be a 4% increase. When I look at the numbers, I think, and it gets back to the stormwater issue, when we were talking about the fees and I talked to people and I listened in public, everybody says that it's high and that they're strapped. So the big part for me is that if we can provide a little bit of economic relief in a time when there's a lot of uncertainty and a lot of things that people, you just don't know if you'll be able to make ends meet sometimes. I would like us to at least take a serious look at the constant yield rate. I think that it's doable. I don't think anybody would lose their jobs. I don't think any services would be cut.
Well, I disagree. And let me tell you something else.
And you're allowed to.
But something else that has happened. We hear about all this financial stimulus and financial relief. It does not affect small towns. We are not part of that. We don't get diddly.
No, but it's affecting the people that live in our
small
towns.
But the thing it is, we have to still maintain the services. We can't say, "Oh, we're going to provide services now 3 days a week." Whatever.
But I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that by adopting the constant yield rate, it maintains that same level of revenue that we had last year. And services would not be cut. Sure, we might not be able to splurge on some other things.
So basically, if people are paying more, it's because their property values went up, and they have the right by law to appeal that. If they feel that their property taxes should, their property assessable value should go up, that's between them and going to the county and the state.
And that's easier said than done. Most people have the homestead tax credit. It's phased in over a period of 3 years. And even if we keep this unchanged, they are going to pay more in July than what they paid last July. And in year three, they will pay more again, even if we don't touch it. That's just the nature of how that thing is phased in. And what the only thing I'm saying is let's please consider, which I think can be done, adopting the constant yield rate, which would give people a 2% drop, and we wouldn't lose any additional revenue from last year to this year. Revenue would stay constant. That's the constant yield rate.
There's no guarantee that revenue is going to stay constant.
There isn't. I agree. There's no guarantee that if we pass this that we'll get what we're asking.
Councilman Tindall, I have received a certificate from State Department Assessment and Taxation. As of right now, we have already almost for the town of Berlin $3 million in properties pending to appeal in reduction of assessed base value. If those cases will go through and will be approved, we will not receive the budgeted amount that we have in the budget listed as of right now.
I understand that.
And I think this is where this individual citizens, we're not staying away. We don't get involved at all. It's complete with them. But we have a responsibility to pay our bills and provide the services. And, nobody wants this situation. But it's our job to do our job and make sure that we provide the services that people absolutely depend on. And I think holding the rate is responsible. We may have some very tough times later this year, and we may have to discuss those kinds of options. But I don't think we should plan for it. I don't think we should plan for, major cutbacks when we have something that individuals, if they feel that they have a case, they should make the case. We can't make the case for them.
And I understand that. But what I'm saying is that we have, look at the unemployment rate. Look at the macroeconomic environment. That is going to trickle down to us. And the government at the state level and the federal level may be helping out. But I think by providing, 2% isn't much. We all know that. But 2% is something. And if we can give a little bit of some relief, then I think it would be kind to do that, and it would be within our scope within the budget.
We didn't create the problem. We're not the ones that have any control over the macroeconomics of what's happening in this country.
I mean,
we're not benefiting from it in any way. And I feel we need to, our job is to take care of the town of Berlin, make sure the services are here, and police protection, and all that. And that's what we're committed to do. And if we face a financial dilemma later, we may have to reduce the budget. But right now, I think it would be irresponsible to start cutting further into our potential revenues when we know there's so many potential pitfalls that may happen between now and sometime this coming fiscal year. And we've got to have some baseline to work from. And I think this is one of the things is that, sure, if we get manna from heaven, or basically the federal government, somehow, then wonderful. But we have to set a rate that we can always, you know, take a look at if there's some way in which we can help people if we're in a position to. But the thing it is, the bills are not going to stop. The bills to the town of Berlin will not stop. And the services have to be maintained. And we're not, you know, I just think that, you know, it's a nice thought. It's a very nice thought.
And it's a totally doable thought. It's not far-fetched. It's not saying that we need to go back to the previous tax rate. It is saying, let's maintain the constant yield at 78 and some change and make some tight cuts that put us in line so that we have a cushion, which we can do without jeopardizing services,
well, this allows
without
for
cutting any jobs.
This allows for a cushion, assuming everything doesn't go to hell.
We have a cushion. We have some room to be able to do some wiggle.
Well, I think it's irresponsible to start doing that at this time and this stage of this time. And I just have to say, though, it may not be popular, but I think my responsibility is to do what I think is right for the town and the responsibility for the town, and not to be doing something that is a feel-good kind of thing.
And I think you've done that, Mayor. All due respect to everyone in this room, but, you know, 2 months ago we sat here and we talked about a potential real tax rate of 83 cents.
And I would argue the same thing.
I can tell you that, speak candidly, I know that the mayor, with what's going on now with the pandemic, that was a major factor in doing what we've done.
But respectfully, if we look at what we spent last year, nobody suffered last year. Here at Town Hall, in all of our departments, no individual or service was cut. And the constant yield rate would maintain that. And it would provide some relief to the people of Berlin.
What you're talking about is a $60 credit on a $300,000 assessment. We cut 5 cents off this tax rate, and I can tell you what was the biggest mistake we ever made.
I'm not saying
it felt good.
I'm not saying five cents, and I'm not saying a few of it.
You're $60 is what you're talking about, Zach. I don't.
$60 is a lot to some people.
Well, I'm very sorry if that's going to make or break someone. If that is, then their life is beyond our rescue. And I hope that's not the case. I hope that there's adjustments that can be made. But the adjustments, we're making our cuts, we're making sure that the service can be provided, and I stand by the recommendation that I know I've made and the town administrator and the finance have made, and now it's up to you, the council, because this is a decision that must be made tonight. So.
I started my motion.
Okay.
Make a motion that we keep the rate the same.
Okay. We have a motion by Councilmember Brittingham to maintain the current tax rate for real property taxes in the town of Berlin at 80 cents per $100 assessed value. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Opposed.
Okay. Thank you. And that to the vote tally on that decision was 3-4 and 1 against. Thank you again. Next is the first reading of Berlin.
general in-town budget, which we will not be making a decision tonight, but it is the first formal introduction. We have work sessions. The general fund, again, total is, as I mentioned earlier, is 5.9 million, a reduction of $244,630, or 4% below the current budget. The electric fund total is 5.5 million, an increase of $173,641, or 3%. The water fund total is $941,000, an increase of $25,975, or 3%. The sewer fund budget being proposed is 2.5 million, an increase of $56,089, or 2%. And the stormwater fund total is $379,000, a decrease of $75,000, or a decrease of 70%. I think our approach to expenditures is very conservative while still ensuring that all town services are maintained at a high and consistent level. Town revenue streams, which are projected to be lower than normal for the new fiscal year, which begins July 1st, are income taxes, room taxes, building permits and fees, and state highway user funds. Berlin's real property assessment base will increase by 4%, but all property taxes will not be received until early 2021, over 6 months after the new budget is implemented and after citizens have had an opportunity to appeal their assessed value. The primary budget increases in the proposed budget are a 2% increase for regular employees, which have not had an increase for a while, and 4% increase, which we have no control over, in our health insurance premiums, and a 9% increase for all of our sworn officers in the Berlin Police Department, which is the lowest paid police department in this region, regardless of the size of the municipality. Our largest general fund capital projects proposed for the new fiscal year are street improvements at $111,000, funded by the state highway user revenues, and the Henry Park basketball court lighting at $108,500, funded by the state parks and recreation grant. Capital projects for the general fund for each of the utility funds are shown in the information posted that will be posted on the town's website from our meeting packet. Is that now or would that be tomorrow?
Yes, it's out there.
Okay. So anybody that wants to look at the particulars of any, it's on the website now. By the way, probably everyone knows this, but the town website is www.berlinmd.gov. Now, ask Natalie, will you share with all of us any changes that have been made to the proposed budget that we're discussing tonight that will not be acted on until next month? Anything that's changed as a result of the work sessions that we held today?
So we hold two sessions for general fund work sessions to discuss the details, and also a second one for utility funds. As of the second session on utility funds been discussed, we have highlighted the opportunity to start a small repayment or get on the scheduled plan from the sewer fund to start repaying general fund, and also stormwater repaying the general fund. So those transfers are highlighted, and it's a change from the work session. Page 3, the middle of the page, you will see contribution from sewer of $50,000, contribution from stormwater, $25,000. Once again, as I mentioned, at the utility funds, those transfers will not be done till the very end of the fiscal 21, and they're totally dependent on the situation, how the revenue is going to come in the utilities, and availability for us to actually execute those transfers. So another change, on page 7, when we distributed the allocation for customer service, so customer service is allocated through the utility funds by the percentage. When I married the two budgets together for the utility and general fund, and the customer service being allocated That presented an opportunity to allocate $100,000 to be put back to reserves. So you will see a new line item on page 7, middle of the page, and I call it stabilization reserve. Again, that would be a transfer from general fund to the reserves in case if all the revenues will come in as projected and everything will play out to the benefit of that, we will be able to do a transfer to reserves, $75,000 from the utility and $100,000 from general fund to have in reserves. That's the only change I have from the work sessions.
Does anyone have any questions for Natalie regarding the proposed budget for the next fiscal year? If not,
I do, but I think my questions are rather lengthy. So I talked to Jeff, and I think it's probably better if you and I schedule a time to discuss
sure.
that.
That's fine. And then, that's fine. Sure. And to say everyone knows, the public hearing on the budget for the town of Berlin for the next fiscal year is scheduled for our next regular session meeting, which is Tuesday, May 26th, the night after Memorial Day. And that's when there will be a public hearing. And after the public hearing, we anticipate that that's when the council will be asked to take a vote on the proposed budget.
Mayor, just to add, it's 7 o'clock, and it's going to be a live stream meeting, so nothing changes from the settings, just for people to listen. So
it'll be the same format,
yes. And everybody welcome to send their questions in between. It doesn't have to be at the meeting.
Yeah, you can do it. Always do it at any time.
The questions for that, I mean, the budget is set out there. We've discussed that the public hearing will be on the 26th, so questions can be, as folks have questions, they can start submitting them as we speak now.
And we started the process back in 1st of March.
Is this new draft budget available online?
This particular draft that you're looking right now available online has been posted since Wednesday of last week. It will remain on the website till we replace with adopted budget.
Can we make a Facebook post or something that says this is the draft budget and this is the process by which you'll send in your questions? Not that I'm just saying from a public comment standpoint, it would be a nice
Wednesday of next week. We will post the most recent draft budget along with the cover sheet that I included this time around, explaining the process on submitting questions and the live stream process. So that will all be updated on Wednesday with the newest available.
Is that this Wednesday?
I'm sorry, Wednesday before the meeting, which is the
next Wednesday.
Yes.
20th, I think it is.
Yes, it is the 20th.
Well, let me ask you, I know with all that, but can you just post the actual budget that we've just been discussing? It's a lot of pages. And that way people can have that extra week.
Yeah, it's currently
it's on the website now.
That's fine.
That budget's already posted there.
But what I'm saying is, if you could just send a Facebook notice to it, reminding, it's one of those things where everybody's got a lot on their mind these days, and that way they can be reminded. You can find the budget on the website, and then and the other things that we'll be happening next week.
And just the and make sure that the information in that post says this is how you can solicit your questions for
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next is the town administrator's report.
I've got a couple things, Mayor and Council. One, I just want to, you heard Natalie talk about a reserve stabilization. So we have presented the mayor, we started the dialogue anyway, and put it in writing with a draft reserve policy. So that'll be introduced to you very near future as well. Okay. I want to remind everyone that we do have open enrollment for health benefits. That'll be next Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. A week from tomorrow begins. Tuesday, it'll be in the a.m. Wednesday, it'll be from 8 to 4, and then Thursday from 1 to 4. Okay. It'll take place. It's going to kind of be spread out this year by virtue of the association. not as many vendors, but it'll be set up here, a conference room, potentially down in the old police station. So I ask that everyone please make your presence known so you can sign a couple documents. I'd like to get some things updated, make sure that they're current, your emergency contacts, the beneficiaries and stuff like that. Departmental reports from the from Ivy. She wishes me to inform you all that we have expanded the footprint of the farmer's market to include both Pitts and Commerce Street. The new layout was very well received. She's working with the museum on a new outdoor sign, and we'll be meeting with them about the Peach Festival. The Peach Festival is currently scheduled for the first weekend in August. Worked with BES art teacher Melissa Reed on a kids' art project called, quote, "What I Can't Wait to Do in Berlin," end quote. Drawings, which will be posted on the town's Facebook at a later date. Pavers will be put into place in the island area near the corner of Pitts and Main Street. The contractor has been awarded to Danny Moore. Lisa Challenger and Melanie Purcell and Ivy will be filming the Beach and Beyond show downtown Tuesday morning. And that's an annual commercial that Ivy assists with the folks in the county. Water Resources reports for the past 2 weeks, meter readings, troubleshooting the drying bed mold failure, clean disc filter at the treatment plant, flush water line, and I.G. Burton sampled sludge, submit monthly net DMR reports, created hand sanitizer stations for the farmer's market, dug a swale on Evans Road to allow for stormwater to go back into the catch basin. And if I may highlight on that, if you've been west on Evans Road before you get to the railroad track, that road has been compromised. Water has not been leaving the road, so they've gotten rid of the water. We're hoping tomorrow to have some asphalt put in there and fix that. Replaced an alternator switch at the Broad Street lift station, assisted AT&T to access at the water tower, troubleshooting high levels of alarms at 346 West, replaced pump at 346 West, the pump was failing, and Jamie said he went through every troubleshooting option there was, and obviously it's always the last thing that gets it right. Collected monitoring well samples at the spray site one. And that's my report in the departmental report. So unless Natalie or Mary, do you have anything?
No, I don't have anything.
Okay. Thank you. I just briefly want to say that it's been, no one knows exactly when the reopening of our state will happen. I think in terms of internal planning, we're hopeful that some reopening will begin by the end of this month, basically by Memorial Day, and that the remainder phases of reopening, if there's no major setbacks, will maybe be accomplished by the 1st of July. That's our general plan internally, and we're obviously waiting for guidance from the governor, Governor Hogan. Thank everyone for their extraordinary patience in working with the town during these very trying times. Next, any comments from the council? Yeah.
I have one, and it kind of piggybacks off of Ivy's thing, and you and I talked at the farmer's market. Mm-hmm. So the farmer's market was just Pitt Street, then it was extended to Commerce, and still gets somewhat congested in there, and we have more vendors than what we have space. We also have several businesses that want to participate and may not have the space to be able to accommodate that. And I was talking to Ivy, and I was like, why don't we incorporate a little bit of Main Street? Typically, we shut down Main Street for many different events, and those things have been canceled. So Ivy's discussion back to me was that would be something that we would have to discuss here and run by Arnold, but I don't see why in the time that we're in that we don't try to make the most out of Commerce that we can. And if we can shut down a portion of Main Street and still keep it so that people can go around and get where they need to go on a Sunday, I think it would be a nice thing to do. It'll provide extra revenue to our shops. It'll provide some extra revenue downtown. And it fits with what needs to be done.
I think
it's...
No, no. they defer to our thing, because it's our town, and they've got so many bigger things to deal with.
I think that there are some areas that we could cut off and really expand it. One, it's going to provide a little bit more room for people to social distance. Two, it'll provide more space for people to conduct comments.
And I think your idea, like when you mentioned it Sunday morning, I think it's an excellent idea. And I put it this way, it's like anything else. We'll give it all the thought. If the council approves, give it all the thought it needs. Try it. If we need to do some tweaking, we can do that. But I don't think anybody will be prohibited from getting to church services or any other place you're trying to get to for that one.
And if they are, we can adjust. I mean, we started with just Pitt Street. We took some input, and we've really grown the market, and there appears to be more demand than we have supply, so let's extend that a little bit.
It's a wonderful problem to have, especially in these
economic times.
Absolutely.
So if that's something that we can make happen, I think it'd be great. And extend that offer to our businesses. If they want to open up a little outdoor market that meets those social distancing demands, then go ahead. I think it falls within the governor's mandate.
Yeah, and if I understand, I want to make sure I've interpreted your thoughts correctly, is that obviously we prohibit traffic during the hours of the farmer's market. It wouldn't be 12 hours or whatever. But before the farmer's market opens and for setup, and then until the farmer's market is completely clear, prohibit traffic on Main Street. Of course, it's already prohibited on part of Pitts and Commerce. Then the second part of that would be that once that is accomplished, I would recommend, and I think it reflects what you're saying, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that we would be encouraging businesses on Main Street to put a table outside on the sidewalk. We've got plenty of space. We can do plenty of social distancing. I don't see any difference between those businesses and the people who are participating in the farmer's market. And quite frankly, I think the draw then, there'll be more people coming to the farmer's market. And if they have an interest in seeing any of the goods that are available on the street during that same time, I don't see the downside.
I don't either. And everybody was wearing a mask. People were trying to be as cordial as they can. Our streets are only so wide, so you can only distance so far. But I thought that it was pretty good. I mean, the market was thriving. People were there. Everybody was being kind.
Does anybody have any comments?
That's a great idea.
All right. That's it. So we need to have a motion then and a vote.
I'll make the motion.
Please.
As previously stated and summarized by the mayor.
Yeah, fine. So the bottom line is we will be during the farmer's market hours, going to set up and then throughout the farmer's market, and then when it's taken down, have traffic prohibited from going through Main Street at the intersection of Commerce and Main and Pitts. And how far back that goes, we'll let the police decide. Whatever they think it makes sense for them. But that would be done. And that we would also be, through our Economic Community Development Department, encouraging Main Street businesses or any businesses downtown who wants to set up a table on sidewalks on Main Street to certainly do that during the hours of the farmer's market.
And I would also ask that after that time frame of the farmer's market's over, that the people take their stuff back inside. Because if you keep that stuff outside, and it just, I mean, everybody was trying to do a good job of being respectful of the cars and crossing Main Street to get between Pitts and Commerce, but it's still not as safe as it could be. So I would say that after those hours, please take your stuff back in.
Yeah, that makes sense. That way there's not a conflict.
Right.
Everybody has a target. People can come knowing what to expect, and the people who are participating can also know it. But I think it's a very good idea.
Are you talking just about essential type businesses setting up tables?
No,
talking about anybody.
Businesses on Main Street.
And I'm pretty sure Jeff
is not going to run afoul.
Well, you know what? I'm determined that we're going to reopen in a common sense, reasonable way. I see no difference between people sitting at the table for farmers market and some of the businesses already participating and anybody else. I mean,
I think the Department of Commerce has reined in on this, and they've said that we fit within those confines.
Yeah.
I mean, Jeff and Ivy have spoken to the Department of
Commerce. Well, we will confirm that, okay, and I'm pretty certain as well that we're fine.
Yeah, we don't want to break any rules, but we want to provide the most opportunity within those rules.
And I think here's the thing. It's our responsibility to figure out how to make this transition in a responsible way. There's social distancing, people have to wear masks, all the things they have to do if they're already here.
I'm sorry, our police chief has asked if he could call in. He has comments on this. He said he sees some issues.
Well, he can talk to us later.
Okay,
yeah,
I will let
that's fine.
If it's something that's not permitted, we'll deal with that. If it's something that is.
Yeah.
Okay.
But
I also have a question about the businesses that are not on the main street. For example, baked dessert or businesses on that side.
Well, they're allowed to be in the farmer's market.
So we'll have to discuss how they will participate.
Yeah.
I'm sorry we just threw a logistical nightmare in Ivy's and the police chief's direction, but if you can make it work, please do.
Yeah. I think there again, let's use common sense and let's not discriminate and say, okay, these people can set up a stand, and these people can. We're all here trying to support each other in the same identical way. There's no extra lowering of standards in making this transition. And quite frankly, I'm hoping some other communities, if they see this work, might follow suit.
And we might not get it right away.
I think before we put the cart before the horse, let's tomorrow confirm that we are within the limits that we can do this. Yeah. Or not do it.
Well, again, I think it's time to take some what I'll call proactive, reasonable strides. In reality, this is a terrible thing that's happened. But in reality, the rural counties in this state are being severely punished because of five counties where there's a real problem, and including four counties in Baltimore City. And I realize that the people are highly congested there. I feel for them. I'm very sorry for them. But there's got to be a point where, wait a minute, we're all doing what we're supposed to do, and we're being punished economically and small businesses, not large businesses, small businesses are the foundation of our economics of our community, both from a standpoint of revenues and also employment. And I think it's time for small towns to stand up and be heard. And I know that might not be totally popular, but it's not a time to do what's popular, it's time to do what's right. And so please, you all confer with the chief, you know how I feel, and check. Let's see what we can do.
Do you need a formal motion, or are we okay?
What do you?
I don't know.
I'm probably showing
it. I think the motion needs to be you want to pursue it.
Okay.
You want to pursue.
Make a motion that we pursue in a safe and healthy manner.
Yeah. Well, we have a motion to pursue this idea that we've been discussing regarding the farmers market and its extension along Main Street. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay. Passes 4-0. All right, thank you.
That's my only comment.
Cool. That was a very good one, though. Thank you. All right, any other comments?